Zocha to see him one time, but he was a giant. He was an absolute giant. I'm saying there's no one on planet Earth who knows Torah like Rav Chaim Kanievsky. That's just a crazy thing. That a person could have such an absolute mastery of every bit of Torah. I have a hard time remembering like what I learned, you know, when I did Shnayim Mikra this past week. Let alone to, and he wrote on the most obscure Torah texts. It's just an absolute Torah genius. It's really unbelievable. I mentioned in Shul Friday night that Rav Yitzchak Kuttner has a piece in the Pachad Yitzchak in the back. There's like Yiddish Mamarim. So I once had a friend who spoke Yiddish. I made him teach it to me. So Rav Kuttner says, Rav Kuttner was a very Purim Dika Yid. Rav Kuttner on Purim was in very high places. So Rav Kuttner said, you know, one of the questions that we ask ourselves after Yom Tov is like, what did we take from the Yom Tov? What did we gain from the Yom Tov? So Rav Kuttner says, it wouldn't be so bad after most Yom Tov if you took the Yom Tov with you. Right? So after Rosh Hashanah, for example, we crown Hashem as king. It wouldn't be so bad if you had a little bit of the Yiras Shamayim that we felt on Rosh Hashanah of making Hashem Melech. Wouldn't be so bad. Wouldn't be so bad on Yom Kippur if we took some of the feelings of tshuva from Yom Kippur with us the whole year. No, wouldn't be so bad. Wouldn't be so bad after Pesach if we took a little bit of Chayrus with us, or after Shavuos we took a little bit of Kabbalah Sotara with us. It wouldn't even be so bad on Sukkot if we took some of the Zman Simchaseinu with us. Simchas. It's a gedol yos b'simcha tavir. It's good to always have simcha. But Rav Kuttner says Purim's tricky because on Purim it's hard to take Purim with you because he says oy va'avoy to the person who lives ad lo yada all year round. You know, you can't take Purim with you. If the avod of Purim is the avod of ad lo yada, that kind of has to stay in Purim. Right? But there is a feeling, there is a sense that after Purim you're supposed to take Purim with you, and I think part of the idea is because is there any other day? Really, is there any other day? I was saying at Shalosh Shabbos on Shabbos. My friend Isaac was there. We're doing a little chazar in today's shir. But I was saying, I really miss Purim this year. No? Anyone else have that feeling? Like, I can't believe it's over. It was so geschmack. And I'm sad. It's like, you know, it's like a good friend who you know you're not going to see for a long time. And you're saying goodbye. I really feel that way. I don't usually feel that way after Purim. I really feel like this tremendous void after Purim. And I think part of the reason is because on Purim you're so enveloped by it. Right? You're swimming in it, you know? It's such a full body experience. The Vilna Gaon said there are two mitzvahs that a person does with their entire body. What are they? The Vilna Gaon did not say mikvah. Good example. The Vilna Gaon said, and he based it off of a pasuk in Tehillim. Right? He said, Sukkah and Eretz Yisrael. When you're in the Sukkah, your whole body is enveloped by the Sukkah. When you're in Eretz Yisrael, your whole body is in Eretz Yisrael. But the Svarim say, what about Mikvah? Right? What about Shabbos? Shabbos also. Shabbos, wherever you are, even more so than, you know, Sukkah, you can leave the Sukkah. Shabbos, you can't leave Shabbos. Wherever you're in Shabbos, you're in Shabbos. Same thing with Purim. If you're Makabel Purim in a real way, wherever you are in Purim, right, you're living in that space called Purim. You're enveloped by Purim. So when I heard that Rav Chaim Kanievsky passed away on Erev Shabbos, so I pulled out one of the Svarim. I pulled out a bunch of his Svarim, actually. There's a Sefer that we have called Derech Sicha. I have it here. I'm holding it in my hand. So it's written by one of the Talmidim, one of the close Talmidim, Rav Elio Mann, close Talmud of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And it's questions that he asked him and conversations. Again, you don't get to see the full breadth of Rav Chaim's brilliance when you read a sefer like this, because it's really just, you know, shorter ideas. Right? But it gives us a window. And I said, you know, since it's Erev Shabbos, let me find a piece on Shabbos. That's only Rav Chaim said about Shabbos. And I was thinking about Purim, and I found a piece that I think captures kind of the feeling of, you know, Motzei Shabbos also. There's this feeling of a void, right? We smell the besom on Motzei Shabbos because we feel something's been taken from us. The Neshama Yaseira has been taken from us. So on Purim, after Purim, if you swam in Purim, you feel like something's been taken away from you. When a Gadol B'Yisrael passes away, the Jewish people mourn the fact that something, there's a void in our life, right? Hamakum Yenachem Esam. There's like a big space that was once filled by by this holy tzaddik, by this massive Talmud Chacham, and now it's gone. So his Talmud asked him the following question. He said, "In Los Angeles, b'Shabbos Kodesh, noisim mechonios rabot. On Shabbos in Los Angeles, as opposed to Bnei Brak, right, there are many cars that drive around. Not Jews. I mean, Bnei Brak, you don't see a car on the street in Bnei Brak on Shabbos. But in Los Angeles, or New York, or New Jersey, there are cars." And he says, and sometimes when a person is, let's say, walking to shul, there's different paths a person could take. On one road, you'll see more cars. If you go on a different road, you'll see less cars. And again, it's non-Jews driving cars. It's not Jews driving cars. So is it better to walk on the path? Is it better to take the street that's going to see less cars? I have this shaila every Shabbos. When I walk from my house to shul, the shorter way is to make a right turn and go up Newbridge, which is a very busy street, or I could kind of stay on sort of the back end of the Bergenfield streets and I'll see less cars. So what's a better way? Does it matter? Does it matter to see non-Jews driving on Shabbos? So Chaim answered based on the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Nun Gimel. The Gemara says, what happens if you light a candle on Shabbos for a woman who's pregnant and giving birth, which is considered, you know, it's kind of stafashos, and you need light to help her birthing? Or let's say a chola who benefits from light on Shabbos in a way that is permissible to light that candle for the chola. So you lit the candle on Shabbos in a way that's halachically permissible, right? A Jew lit it. Can you use that ner for Havdalah? So the halacha says yes, you're allowed to. But a candle that was lit by a non-Jew, right, is not an acceptable candle. And even though a non-Jew is not allowed to keep Shabbos, right? Not only is a non-Jew not obligated to keep Shabbos, a non-Jew is not even allowed to keep Shabbos, but there's still a notion that what? There's still a notion that the Maisa is a Maisa of Chilul Shabbos. It's very interesting. Right? Again, a non-Jew is no Chiyuv to keep Shabbos. He's not even allowed to keep Shabbos. But there's still a notion of Chilul Shabbos. Chilul means like a void. There's a lack of Shabbos when a non-Jew drives his car on Shabbos. In other words, Rav Chaim is saying that if a person could have the opportunity to be more fully immersed in Shabbos, right, and see less cars, it's a very interesting thing, right? It takes away from Shabbos. If you walk on a street and you see people driving around, it changes the atmosphere of Shabbos. And Shabbos is supposed to be this enveloping, this full body experience. Kind of like Purim is. Kind of like the experience, again, if you've been to a Gadol B'Yisrael, when you're in his presence, there's nothing else on your mind. You're not distracted. You're fully immersed in that experience. And then Rav Chaim mentioned, he shared that the Chavetz Chaim was once in Warsaw, and he saw a lot of Chil Shabbos in Warsaw. And he was very shaken by it. The Chavetz Chaim was very shaken by it. And then the Chavetz Chaim said that another time he saw it, the second time he saw it, he said he wasn't so shaken by it, and that bothered him terribly. And you get used to, a Jew from Bnei Brak comes to Los Angeles for Shabbos, is what he's saying, and I see cars driving around, it's cars on Shabbos? No, don't worry, they're not Jews driving, they're non-Jews. It doesn't matter, that doesn't feel like Shabbos. Right? So there's certain experiences in life that have to be, you know, a person is fully immersed in it. And that's why when it's over, you feel a void. When Shabbos is over, you feel a void. When Purim is over, if you soaked it up, you feel this tremendous void that needs to somehow be filled. When there was a Gadol B'Yisrael, who is a bigger than life personality, who touched hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, right? And his little room on Rehov Rashbam is like the epicenter of Jewish existence. Whether you understand what that means or not, right? There's a tremendous void that's left with the passing of such a gadol. Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. A Jew could do it for a chola. Yeah, you're allowed to be benefit from a non-Jew's chil Shabbos if he does it for himself. If he's doing it for you, so then you get into the whole question of a mira lenachri, which is not our sugi right now. But again, that the Gemara reveals us that there's an element of chil Shabbos, right? It creates a less Shabbosic atmosphere. So, chavra, again. Most of us, you know, we don't know exactly We don't, because we're far removed from it, both in terms of time and space, and in terms of connection. We don't fully understand what it means for a Gadol B'Yisrael to live in this world and then to leave this world. We're talking about a person who he lived a totally different, his whole world, he was swimming in Torah. He was soaking up Torah every second of his life. Just try to think about what that means for a second. Talk about a person who finished Kol HaTorah Kula, made a siyum on Kol HaTorah Kula every year. Finish all of Shas, Bavli, Yerushalmi, all of Shulchan Aruch, all of the Midrashic literature, all of Tanakh, every year. You know, he just finished it right before he passed away. You heard this story?
Yeah.
Rav Chaim has a very specific schedule, how he learns. So in a leap year, usually he finishes right on Erev Pesach and makes his big Siyam on Erev Pesach. But in a leap year, he finishes on Yud Dalet. He finished his cycle the day before, and then he usually uses that extra month to write Svarim. That's what I've been told. So Mamish, you know, when the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chazal say that Hashem is Mashlim Shnoisov Shel Tzadikim, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu was born and died on, you know, Zayin Adar. Hashem's, the lives of the Tzadikim are full and perfect. So, you know, finishes Avoda and say goodbye to this world. It's such an unbelievable... Such an unbelievable thing. And it's a hard perspective. I spoke about it on the Shabbos also. You know, this notion of like, at the end of the parsha, it says that the Kohen during the Kohanim during the inauguration of the Mishkan had to quarantine. Right? For 7 days, it says that the Kohen's not allowed to leave the Ohel Moed for 7 days. Yeah, at the end of this week's parsha. So I was thinking about that in the context of Rav Chaim. I'm talking about a person who sat kind of in his room for hours and hours and hours and days and days and days and years and years and years and decades and decades and decades. We Pesach Ol Moed Lo Seitu Shivas Yamim. Right? You have to stay in the Ol Moed. You have to stay in the Mishkan during the inauguration for 7 days. Kasher Oso B'Yom Hazeh Tziva Hashem La'asos L'chaper Aleichem. Rashi says the same way that the person who prepares the paraduma has to quarantine for 7 days. And l'chaper aleichem refers to what? Kohen Gadol in preparation for Yom Kippur. Anyone ever learned Maseches Yoma? What's the first mission of Maseches Yoma? 7 days before Yom Kippur, what did they do? They took the Kohen Gadol, where would they put him? In Elishchas Palhedrin. And he was there for 7 days. So in 1965, Rabbi Norman Lamb gave a drasha. And he said the following. Then we'll get to today's shir. But just to talk about Rav Chaim for a couple of minutes. Rabbi Norman Lamb said in 1965, he said, you know, the Gemara in Yoma and Daf Yud talks about this room, this chamber of the Kohen Gadol. Does the Beis HaMikdash, the rooms of the Beis HaMikdash, do they require a mezuzah? Does a shul technically, a Beis Knesset technically require a mezuzah? The answer is no. If it's used, if it doesn't have Kedushas Beis HaKnesset, if it's not used only for shul purposes, then it could be b'chayiv and mezuzah. But the Beis HaMikdash, the rooms of the Beis HaMikdash didn't require mezuzah. Rabbi Yehuda says in the Gemara, in Yoma and Daf Yud, that the Kohen Gadol's room had a mezuzah. The rabbis made a rule, a gzeira, that the Kohen Gadol's room should have a mezuzah. Rabbinic decree. Why? Technically it's exempt. Chambers of the Beis HaMikdash are technically exempt from mezuzah. You know why they put a mezuzah on his door? The Gemara says, so people shouldn't say that the Kohen Gadol is chavush bebeis ha'asuri. They shouldn't say that the Kohen Gadol is being held in captivity. They don't want to give the impression that the Kohen Gadol is stuck there. So putting up a mezuzah makes it look like, no, this is my room, this is my house. What do you mean? I live here. I'm not being held hostage in Beis HaMikdash. So Rabbi Norman Lamb said that the drasha he gave at the Jewish Center in 1965. He says, just think about this for a second. It's such a sharp insight. Think about this. People are going to say that what the Kohen Gadol is being held in captivity in Beis HaMikdash in the 7 days of preparation for Yom Kippur. However, think about that for a second. For the Kohen Gadol, this is the ultimate. You have to understand, he's preparing himself to be Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur. This is like the ultimate, you know, achievement of his career. Right? He's made it to the major leagues now. L'havdil. This is the pinnacle of his career. That he gets to spend now a week preparing himself without any distractions to be the Kohen Gadol for Klal Yisrael and Yom Kippur. And yet we put up a mezuzah because we're concerned that some outsider, Someone who has an outside perspective is going to say, oh, the poor Kohen Gadol, he's stuck in Beis HaMikdash, he can't, you know. Does he even have good Wi-Fi in that room? What if he can't go to his favorite restaurant? So Rabbi Lam said it's such a difference between an outsider's perspective and an insider's perspective on life. An outsider looks at Yiddishkeit and says, oh, these poor Jews, they have so many responsibilities. And every week they have to keep a Shabbos, they have to, you know. It's so restrictive. But an insider, a Jew who understands what Yiddishkeit is and understands the joy and the sweetness of being a Yid, what do you mean? I'm not trapped by my Judaism. That's what Purim is. Purim is a celebration of the joy of being a Yid, no? It says at the end of the Megillah, V'rabim me'ame ha'aretz misyadim. What does that mean? V'rabim me'ame ha'aretz misyadim. Many what? Many of the nations of the world, when they saw how the Jews were victorious, misyadim, they converted to Judaism. They were scared of the Jews. People wanted to join us. Big shayla in halacha if they're allowed to do that, how that works. Converting out of fear. You know what some of the Mefarshim explain? Rabbi Me'ameh Ha'aretz Misyadim, the Yalkut Ma'am Lo'ez says, it wasn't non-Jews who converted to Judaism. You know what happened after we won the war, so to speak? We defeated Haman. The Jewish people were saved. Rabbi Me'ameh Ha'aretz, Jews were Amaratim Misyadim. They became real Jews. They decided, I'm going to be a good Jew now. I'm tired of being a parv, cold, a malik type of Jew. I want to be a Jew who really understands what it means. The Jews became Jewish. You understand? Rab me'ame arz misyadim. The Jews became more Jewish after Purim. Ayuhud ma'itza ora, ora zu Torah. I told you the Sfasem is like 20 times already. Sfasem says, why doesn't it just say, Ayuhud ma'itza Torah? No. Because you have to understand, Ayuhud ma'itza ora. After Purim, they understood that Torah and ora, it's the same thing. It's the ora of my life. However, you look at Rav Chaim Kanievsky's life and you say, you know, he sat in his room all day. He sat there with his books. Right? An outsider might say, like, what was he doing? Why is he so important? He just sat around reading for decades. That's such an outsider's perspective. An insider would understand that what for him was the greatest joy. And for us as the recipients of his, you know, the energy that he was shooting out of his little bias on Rehov Rajabam in Bnei Brak. And nothing like that. You know? To understand an insider's view of what it means to be a Yid. Right, so we have a big void to fill. We all have to learn more Torah. That's the bottom line. We have to learn more seriously and we have to learn a lot more. Because there's a tremendous void. And it's a real thing. We have to take that very seriously. We have to really think about that. Yeah.
Torah was like the thing that I was always like focused on. Like,
yeah.
Whenever there was a conflict or an issue, his response was always like, "Jews need to learn more Torah."
Learn more.
Like, that's like all.
Yeah.
All we need to do in order to like fix everything.
I had a friend that once wrote a letter to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. A good friend wrote a letter to Rav Chaim Kanievsky about a particular situation, a very complicated situation. And he wanted advice from the Gadol HaDor. Whether that was a, you know, sensible thing to do or not. To send a letter from New York to Bnei Brak to ask for advice. But he wanted advice about a particular struggle that he was having. Rav Chaim wrote back and he told him to learn more Torah. And at first he was very annoyed because he's like, learn more Torah. That's like what I could have come up with that answer myself. I didn't write to the Gadol HaDor. I wanted him to address my particular Shaila. But this friend said, you know, the Gadol HaDor told me to learn more Torah. So I want to learn more Torah. And he took upon himself like an extra kvias in his learning, you know? An extra seder, an extra something. Start learning Mishnayos, a couple halachos a day, whatever it was. He took something upon himself. He said, at first he was very cynical about it. He was very like disappointed by the response. But then he decided, you know, I'm going to take it seriously. I'm going to learn more Torah. I'll see if it helps. And it helped. He said, it solved this problem. He said, whatever, the thing that was bothering him totally was resolved. You know? You have to believe in the power of Limud Torah. It's not a joke. It's not extra credit. Kihem chayenu v'orachemenu. You have to believe that in a real way. Okay, Chaver, let's have our last Purim Shir. Our thank you to Purim. Say goodbye to Purim Shir. Okay, it says in the Hakdama of the Tikkuni Zohar, we've spoken about this also many times, that the different Sviros the different ways that a Kodesh Baruch Hu manifests and interacts with the world correspond to different body parts. Right? So it says that Chesed is your right arm, it says Gevura is your left arm, and you can see where I bolded in source number one, Tiferes, which is usually we associate the Midah of Yaakov Avinu, the Midah of Klal Yisrael, we're called Bnei Yisrael. Right? Avram is Chesed, so that's the right arm, Yitzchak is Gevura, that's the left arm. Tiferes Gufa. Tiferes, the glory, or splendor, it's a hard word to translate Tiferes, but Tiferes is Gufa. Tiferes is the torso. It's the trunk of the body. Okay? What does that mean, Tiferes is Gufa? So there was a tzaddik of Avram Chaim of Zlotchev, Zuchusi again Aleinu, who had a sefer called Orach L'Chaim. He has haskamas in his sefer from the Berditchever, and from the Oy of Yisrael, and from the Avodas Yisrael, from big tzaddikim. He's one of the big tzaddikim of early Hasidus, you know, second, third generation Hasidus. And he writes the following. He writes in source number two in Parshas Vayetze, he writes, the Pasuk says, the Navi Yeshaya says, Yisrael asher b'cha es pa'ar. Yisrael, the Jewish people in who I get pa'er. Hashem says, I am glorified, I am honored by the Jewish people. So he quotes from one of his rebbeim, the Maggid of Mezrich, he quotes from Rav Dov Ber, Zatzal, in the second line, the Tiferes Nikra Gufa. Like we just learned in the Zohar, Tiferes, Pe'er, glory, splendor, honor of Hashem, right, is somehow associated with what? Tiferes, that Midah called Tiferes is associated with Gufa, is associated with the body. So the Maggid of Mezrich, student of the Baal Shem Tov, said, Shashem Yisbarach Eino Mispa'er B'malachim U'Visrafim She'ovdim Oso. Chaver, what's so gishmak about Purim? What did we gain from Purim? You know what we gained on Purim? And it was everything we learned for weeks leading up to Purim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't get Pe'er, Hashem doesn't glorify Himself. For all the honor that the angels try to give Hashem, all the singing and all the praising that the angels do, Hashem is not Mitpa'er, Hashem doesn't get honor from angels, from seraphim, from fiery beings in Shemayim, she'ovdim oso. She'heim mukhrachin ba'avoda. Because they have to. It's not a choice. They don't have bechira. There's no choosing. There's no yetzahara. Ein lahem yetzahara u'bechira. And therefore, when they choose to serve Hashem, there's no choice. Angels are perfect. Angels don't have alios and yuridos. We stand with our feet together during Shemona Esrei. Like the Navi says, because it says about the angels, they have regal yeshara, straight legs. They don't have knees. They can't lower themselves. They can't raise themselves. They don't have joints. They're straight. They're straight in their avodas Hashem. But that's boring in the eyes of Hashem. Right? Hashem likes chidushim. Hashem likes proving that there could be a dira betachtonim like we spoke about for so many weeks. Hashem yisbach mispar ba'odam shu malubash beguf v'yetzahara. Hashem takes glory in the fact that what? That a person who has a body and has a yetzahara chooses to what? To serve Hashem. That I could be drunk and I could be madly in love with Hashem at the same time. There's only one day a year that we have permission to prove that. That's called Purim. So Tiferes Gufa, what is the Zohar saying when Tiferes corresponds, the Svira of Tiferes corresponds to this part of the body? On a deeper level, explains the Maggid of Mezrich. Tiferes, the glory that we can give HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the fact that I'm human, is the fact that I have a body, is the fact that I could spend the whole day eating and drinking and dancing for hours, you know, and move my body in a way of service of Hashem. That gives HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's Yisrael Asher B'cha Espa'ar. That's the glory of Hashem. It's the greatest glory we can give a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He ends the piece. Al kei nikra tiferes gufa, b'pnei sha'guf sha'odem belubash gorim hisparis. The honor of Hashem, the splendor, the nachas ruach that we can give Hashem is the fact that what? That I'm not an angel. That I'm basar v'dam. That I'm flesh and blood. That I'm a human being with taivas. And I still choose a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the greatest honor I can give a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kedushas Levi writes in this coming week's Parsha Shmini. V'nei atam masha Hashem Yisbarach mekabel tanag me'avodas ha'adam yoyser me'elef alfei alafim kitos malachim she'ovdim oso. Why is it that Hashem likes me more than tens of thousands of angels who serve Him? Even if I was half asleep during Shemona Esrei this morning. Even if I don't follow Shir. Even if I mumbled my bracha. Why does Hashem like that more than the angels, these perfect angelic beings? Tens, thousands, hundreds of thousands of them in Shemayim. Why does Hashem get more tanug, more pleasure from us? And the answer is, ki adua sheyetzer lev ha'adam ra minu rav. The very fact that we have a Yetzirah. Umiyad lepesach chatas rovets, and sin is crouching at our door. So you would think that makes me so imperfect, but it's that imperfection that Hashem loves. And yet when I turn away from being a regular human being, when I make a day like Purim, where I don't think about anything else other than Purim, not my summer internship, not the papers that I have to do, not the midterms that I have coming up, when I put that all aside, and I fight my Yitzhahara shalom leilich achar taivas libo. Azay Hashem Yisbarach yeshlo tanu godol. Hashem gets such great pleasure from that. Kedushas Levi quotes the Gemara in Brachos daf lamed dalet that the place of a Baal Tshuva is even greater than a perfect tzaddik. You know why? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu appreciates the struggles. The Kadosh Baruch Hu likes the person who's grappling with the Yitzhahara, as opposed to the person who, so to speak, has graduated from the Yitzhahara. And then the Berditchever says a pshat in the Mishnah of Pirkei Avos, which is beautiful. The Mishnah of Pirkei Avos says, you can see where he quotes Avos, halfway down, Avos Perek Beis Mishnah Aleph, in source number 3. Eiza derech yishara sheyivar lo adam, kol shi tiferes lo osev, et tiferes lo ben adam. That's the Mishnah. Let me tell you pasha pshat. Eiza hu derech, what is the path, the proper path, derech yishara, Shiyavur loha adam, that a person should choose. That's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. What is the proper path a person should choose? And what's the Mishnah's answer? Whatever is tiferes leosel v'tiferes lo min ha'adam. Let me tell you the pashto pshat. The proper path in life should be tiferes, should be honorable leosel to the one who's doing it. It should be good for me. And it should be tiferes lo min ha'adam, and it should be seen positive in the eyes of others. In other words, strike a balance. Be a balanced person. Don't just do things that are good for yourself. Don't spend your whole life just doing things that are popular in the eyes of others. Try to find the path in life that is good. It brings honor upon yourself. It's an appropriate act for yourself, and it takes into consideration and is well received by others. It's a healthy balance in life. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is the one who said this statement. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, they say, was a Gilgal of Yaakov Avinu, whose midah was Teferis. That's why he speaks about this Indian of Teferis. Do something that's be balanced, right? Avraham is Chesed, that's the right side. Yitzchak is Gvura, that's the left side. Yaakov is the balance. Yaakov is the middle path. Teferis, balance. Teferis lo osav, Teferis lo menalatim. Live a balanced life. But says the Kedusha Slavi, here's what he says. Dahainu, Shekol asakov yachshov shiasu tanug laHashem yisbarach, shiyaspar Hashem yisbarach imo. Do things that make HaKadosh Baruch Hu proud. And the Kedushas Levi reads it differently, where it's bolded. Vizeu shiat tiferes laosel. Tiferes laosel doesn't mean that it should be a source of glory or splendor for laosel, for the one who does it, but rather tiferes, it should bring tiferes, splendor, glory, and honor, le'oseha, to his maker. Do something that gives honor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chever, come grab a source sheet. Do something that gives honor le'oseha, to the one who made him. So how do I do that? Right? Dehainu la'Hashem yisbarach shu bara oso. U'mefareh, so the Mishnah explains. V'tif'eres lo, and the honor that is given to Hashem, klomar, if you ask the question, I need to be the one to give glory and honor to Hashem? Lowly little me, flesh and blood, with all my tithes and all my averos? And answers the Mishnah, Tif eres lo, Hashem's honor is min ha'adam. Comes from man, much more so than angels. Again, the pasuk pshat was what? It should be Tif eres le'oseha, it should be good for the one who's doing it. Tiferes lo min ha'adam, and it should be good in the eyes of other people. This lady has a totally different read. Tiferes lo sel, give honor to your maker. Tiferes lo, and the honor that he receives is min ha'adam, comes from people. Klomar avor shu adam lavush begashmias. It's you in a state of adlo yada a Purim suda, and yet wanting nothing other than dveikus v'Hashem, that Hashem says, see, no angel has ever offered anything like that to me. That's so beautiful. To see that a person can be so deeply immersed in a world of gashmias, in a world of physicality, of eating and drinking, and dancing, and so much guf, and yet to elevate the guf in such a way, to make a dira b'tachtonim out of the guf, that's an unbelievable thing. That's the greatest source of nachas ruach to Hashem. And that's why this past Shabbos, after Purim, we go back to the Beis HaMikdash of sorts. The Torah is introducing us to the Mishkan. It's teaching us how to work in a Mishkan, right? Again, Adar and Av are opposites. Mishnechlas Adar marbim b'simcha, Mishnechlas Av mamatim b'simcha. So that means if Av is Chorban Beis HaMikdash, that means that Adar is Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Can you pass this to them? Thank you. Is Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So however, we come back to Beis HaMikdash in this week's parasha, and we learn about the strangest avodah in Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't feel like it's a geshmak avodah at all. It doesn't feel like it's a real avodah. What am I referring to? Look at source number 4. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, tzav es Aaron vezbanov lemor, zos toras ha'olah hi ha'olah amlok tal mizbeach ha'olah l'boker, vish mizbeach tukad bo, v'levash ha'kohen mido vad, the kohen will put on his special garments, v'chlesei vad yilbash ha'besaro, v'heirim es ha'deshen asher tocha la'esh es ha'olah l'mizbeach. In the third line, v'heirim es ha'deshen, what does the kohen do? He lifts up the ashes. He takes out the garbage. The mitzvah of Trumas HaDeshen. The mitzvah of cleaning up after the Purim Suda. Yeah? Make a big mess on Purim, no? If you had a good Suda, it's probably a little messy. A lot of cleanup, no? It's a big cleanup job. So in the Beis HaMikdash, we're taught that what? That taking out, after you bring the Karban Ola, after you bring the Karban Tamid, after you bring the Karbanos, so you have to what? There's a mitzvah of what? Of Trumas HaDeshen. It's not just a mitzvah. It's the mitzvah that brings us into Beis HaMikdash. It's the opening avodah of the day. Trumas HaDeshen. Removing the ashes. How would they do it? The Kohen would take a special shovel. He would go up to the top of the Mizbeach. He would take a scoop of the innermost ashes, the most burnt ashes, mamish worthless ashes, and he would scoop them up. He would bring them down and replace them next to the Mizbeach, as described in the Mishnayos. It's an avoda. It's a very chashuv avoda. That's an avoda. That's called an avoda. What's that? What kind of avoda is that? Taking out the garbage. No? I give you a bracha. Mir Tashem, all of you, when you get married, you should take out the garbage. Right? So he'll say, that's a bracha? Give me a bracha that I should buy my wife flowers. Give me a bracha, I should do something that's like, you know, take out the garbage, is that it? Right. But in the Beis HaMikdash, there's a mitzvah of Trumas HaDeshen. They would have a lottery to see who would win the schus to start the avodas Beis HaMikdash each morning of Trumas HaDeshen. After burning the karbanos, the fats and the limbs throughout the night, you start the day by what? By lifting up ashes. This is what we read about right after Purim. What's the message? What's Hashem saying to us? And by the way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so deeply connected to Trumas HaDeshen. You would think, if I asked you, like, pick something that we do in the Beis HaMikdash that makes Hashem smile. Right? Trumas HaDeshen is just like practical. It's a cleanup job. There's Trumas HaDeshen, there's Hotzas HaDeshen. Right? Sometimes the ashes pile up so much we have to do like a full cleanup job. Sometimes we do this daily removal of a scoop of ashes. That's okay. It's a practical thing to keep the Mizbeach functional, no? And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels so connected to it. Says the Gemara in Brachos in source number 6. Turn to the second side. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shalosh Mishmaros Have Halayla. The night is divided into three watches. A discussion in Brachos Dav Gimel is the night divided into three sections, into four sections. V'al kol mishmar u'mishmar yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shoeg ka'ari. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at each of the mishmaros, at each of the checkpoints of the night, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what? Is Shoeg Ka'ari. Hashem cries, screams out, roars like a lion. Shenamar Hashem mimarom yishag, mimon kadsho yitain kolo. Shaog yishag al navehu. Hashem is crying out. is roaring like a lion over his Naveihu, over his Beis HaMikdash. V'simin l'davar, and the sign, says Rabbi Eliezer, is that the Mishmar Rishona, Chamor Noer, a donkey brays. Shnia, the sign of the second watch, Kalavim Tzoakim, dogs are howling and barking. And Shlishis, the sign of the third watch, is a Tinok Yonek Mishde Imo, that a baby suckles from its mother's bosom. V'isham is a Paris and Bala. And a woman is telling her husband to shut off his alarm and get up and get to shul and do whatever he does in the morning. A woman speaks to her husband. Yeah? And then the Gemara says, well, which part, you know, is that the beginning of the watch, the end of the watch? So the Gemara clarifies that when Rabbi Eliezer gave these simonim, he was choshev sof mishmar rishona. A donkey brays at the end of the first watch. A dog barks tchilas mishmar achrona. Sorry, a woman nurses her baby tchilas mishmar achrona at the beginning of the third watch. Ve'emtzeis te'emtzeisa. And the dogs bark, right? At chatzos, in the middle of the middle watch. Okay. So three times in the night that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, is some type of heavenly mishmaros. Okay. Says the Tosfos HaRash, an amazing thing. Tosfos HaRash in Brachos Daf Gimel in source number 7 says an unbelievable thing. He says, what's significant about these three points? What's significant about these three times? The beginning of the first watch, the end of the third watch, the middle of the middle watch. So he writes, Tosfos HaRash writes, in the middle of the first line, Kosu b'sefer of Yehuda Barzilai, Mishum detana b'parak kama diyoma, b'chol yom hayu tarmin av ezbeach b'kriyas hagever osam uchlo bein lafanav bein la'achav. When do we usually do Trumas Hadeshem? It says in Meseches Yoma that we usually, b'chol yom, on a regular day, we do it b'kriyas hagever o samachlo, around the time that the rooster says kakadoodle-doo. Uv'yom ha-kippurim, on Yom Kippur, because the Kohen Gadol has a busy day, when does he remove the ashes from the mizbeach? Mechatzos, at midnight. Uv'ragalim, and by the Shlosh Ragalim, when the Beis HaMikdash is even busier, because there's just so many people bringing karbanos, me'ashmur arishona, from the first watch. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is crying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is roaring like a lion over Beis HaMikdash, at these three checkpoints, somehow corresponds to three different times that we remove ashes from the Mizbeach. On a typical day, we remove ashes around the time of the rooster crowing, right? Of the rooster waking up in the morning. And on Yom Kippur, we do it from Chatzos. And on the Shlosh Regalim, we do it even at the beginning of the first watch. So somehow the Mishmaros, the points when Hashem is roaring over the Beis HaMikdash, corresponds to what? To the three times in the calendar year, three different times in the calendar year, where we what? Where we lift up the ashes from the Mizbeach. Says the Tosfos HaRash where it's bolded. U'kishenizkar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Osan Onos, when Hashem thinks about those times, Shayim Mishamshun Lefano B'Mikdash, when we served Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, v'sof mishmar rishona v'chatzi alayla v'tchilas achrona, kiviyachol ein simcha lefanov. Hashem thinks about removing ashes from the Beis HaMikdash, and Hashem says that we don't have that in Gullis, and it makes me sad. Of all the things Hashem misses in Beis HaMikdash, that's what Hashem is so sad about. Taking out the garbage, lifting up ashes after the carbon's been offered. Hashem doesn't miss the offering of the carbon itself. Hashem doesn't miss the sprinkling of the blood. Hashem doesn't miss the singing of the Levium. What? Of all the things that Hashem misses in Beis HaMikdash, He misses the fact that at different points of the night we take out the garbage, depending on the season, depending on the holiday. That's what Hashem misses more than anything. That's strange, no? When Hashem thinks about Beis HaMikdash, that's what makes Him sad? Kiviyachol ein simcha lefanav? And the answer is yes, that's what makes Hashem sad. Because you know what Beis HaMikdash is? You know what Beis HaMikdash is? Hashem has a Beis HaMikdash in Shemayim. We're going to talk about it in a second. But in the Beis HaMikdash in Shemayim, no one takes out the garbage. There's no garbage in the Beis HaMikdash in Shemayim. There's no ashes. Right? Taking out the ashes represents the lowliest avoda in Beis HaMikdash. On the one hand, it's an avoda. There's a lottery. It's one of the avoda. It's the avoda that begins the day, the daily avoda of Beis Hamikdash. It opens the doors. It's how we start the avoda. And yet it seems so mundane. It seems so plain. It seems so regular. It seems so much lacking in holiness. And yet that's what Hashem desires more than anything else. That's what Purim teaches us. That's the takeaway from Purim. That my humanity, that being a human being, and being able to serve Hashem with a guf, not just a nefesh, but to combine a guf and a nefesh. Right, guf plus nefesh is gematria al-mikra megillah. It's that Or Chadash that we were speaking about. Or Chadash, we said a million times, is al-mikra megillah. Guf plus nefesh is gematria 519, is al-mikra megillah. The lesson of the megillah is that I'm not just a soul, I'm a body. And that's geshmak. And that makes Hashem so proud. The fact that I have a Yetzirah, the fact that I have struggles. Like the Pasuk says in source number 8, Ba'anche Kodesh Tiyun Li. What does Hashem want from this world? The Kotzker Rebbe used to emphasize, Anche Kodesh. I don't want angels. I want Anche Kodesh. Anche means what? Anashim, people. I want holy people. Kotzker Rebbe would say, Menschlich Helig, to be human and to be holy. Menschlich means human. To be a human being who's holy. That's a Chiddush. That's a Chiddush in the eyes of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Whereas the Gemara in Pesachim says in source number 9, Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar. The Hasidim read it, Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar. It doesn't just mean that if you're going to have a good party, you have to serve fleishiks. It means the greatest Simcha we can give Hashem is what? That when our flesh is used to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that gives a Kodesh Baruch Hu Simcha. Chevi, do you know that in Shemayim, there's a Beis HaMikdash. There's a Beis HaMikdash Shel Mala. And there's a Mizbeach in Shemayim that's still... it's still functioning. Did you know this? We haven't had a Mizbeach down here in so long. But in Shemayim, there's a Mizbeach. Gemara says in Menachos in source number 10, La'olam Zois al Yisrael. La'olam Zois al Yisrael. Says the Gemara on the last Amud of Mesechus Menachos. Amrav Gidol Amarav. Ze Mizbeach Banoi. This refers to the Mizbeach that is built forever. U'Michael, our Malach, the Malach of the Jewish people. The Malach Michal. Sar HaGadol. Omer umakir v'alav karbon. The Malach Michal in Shemayim is bringing karbonos every day. In this Mizbeach in Shemayim. Interesting. It says Tosfos in source number 11. Umichal sar gadol omer umakir v'alav karbon. The Malach Michal is bringing karbonos. Midrashos chalukin yesh. And there's different midrashim about what's going on there. Yesh misha omer nishmosein shel tzadikim. Some say, I don't know, I have a clue what this means. But he said, well, what's he offering? Well, Karbanos is he offering. The Malach Michal is offering on his Mizbeach the Neshamos of Tzadikim. I don't know what that means. I guess the Neshama of a Holy Tzadik Yishmaim gets to be put on Michal's Mizbeach and gets to be a Karban and lift it up even higher. I don't know what that means. V'yesh Misha Omer Kevasim Shalesh. Another opinion is he offers what? He offers Kevasim, sheep, animals, a fire. Fire animals. I have no idea what that is, right? But it's something very holy is happening in Shemayim on Michal's, on the Malach Michal's Mizbeach. Yeah. So I saw the Tolna Rebbe, Shlita from Eretz Yisrael, says, you know what they don't have in the Beis HaMikdash Shel Mala, though? And that's what this Tosfos Harash is telling us. You know what Hashem misses more than anything? There's no garbage in the Beis HaMikdash Shel Mala. There's no Trumas Hadeshin. When the neshama of a tzaddik is brought on Michal's Mizbeach, whatever that means, there's no ashes. There's no ashes that stay behind. And Hashem, as the Tosfos is telling us, is roaring like a lion. I miss my Beis HaMikdash. You know how insulting that is to the countless angels in Shemayim who are singing and offering karbanos and doing their thing? And Hashem's like, yeah, but who's taking out the garbage? There's no garbage. Hashem, what do you love so much about the garbage? Hashem says, because when I see that a human being, Anche Kodesh, when a human being with his guf is serving me, Hashem says, there's nothing I love more than that. There's nothing I love more than that. The struggle that a person goes through. And to be able to get to a point where what? Where I embrace it. And I'm able to just be besimcha. Right? Not to feel that it's a struggle. That's an outsider's view. An outsider looks at a yid, right, and sees the struggle as painful. But we love the struggle. The struggle is the geshmak of life. Baal Tanya writes, we're supposed to be fighters. We're Beinonim. Our whole life's supposed to be a fight. But on Purim, we dance, we celebrate that. Yeah, I don't know anything, but so what? I can still be besimcha. because I have the opportunity to try to make something out of my basar. Libi ubisari, yiranu lekelcha. You know, to serve Hashem with a guf. That's the most unbelievable thing in the world. Rav Leibel Eger was always collecting teachings from his Rebbe, the Kotzker. He used to ask people for who's got a Vard on the Kotzker. He was always going out trying to find another Vard on the Kotzker. So one time someone told him, and he knew all of them, he would finish them, Tochadei Dibur. Someone would start to say a Vard, he'd finish it. Finally, he found someone who told him the following Vard he had never heard from the Kotzker. He was so happy. Let's look at the last source. Kimi, David HaMelech says, Kimi vashachach ya'aroch la'Hashem, yidme la'Hashem b'vnei elim. The Pasha Pshat is the following. Mi vashachach. Who in the heavens ya'aroch la'Hashem? Ya'aroch could be understood as like, is comparable to Hashem. Right? Who compares to Hashem? Yidme la'Hashem b'nei elim. That even the angels, even the seemingly perfect beings of Shemayim, are not perfect like Hashem. The B'nai Elim, the ones of great strength. Right? The holy ones above, the fiery ones above. Right? They can't compare it to Hashem. No one compares to Hashem. Right? Mido Malach, who's like you? We say it in Shmoneh Esrei. Mido Malach, who's like you, Hashem? No one's like you, Hashem. The Kotzker Rebbe said the following. Ki mi v'shachak ya'aroch la'Hashem. Ya'aroch also could be, Ibn Ezra actually on this pasuk says, ya'aroch is like yarichenu. Yarichenu akoin. Yarochim means to prepare. So the Kotzker Rebbe said, "Mi vashachak yaroch l'Hashem." Who in Shemayim prepares for Hashem? Does a malach need to prepare himself? Does a malach have to try to get himself to shear? Does a malach have to struggle to? Is there any preparation? Is there any effort? Is there any process? Mi vashachak. Who in the heavens is what? Is Ya'aroch la'Hashem. Who prepares for Hashem? Yidme la'Hashem b'vnei Elim. Because the b'nei Elim, they're kind of like Hashem himself in that, like it's just, they don't have a Yitzhar, they don't have a body. But we do. And we have to prepare. And we have to strive, and we have to try, and we have to mess up and try again. But nothing compares to that. Nothing compares to that. Nothing compares in terms of giving honor to Hashem. Like a person who's struggling and overcoming those struggles. And trying to fall in love with being a Jew. I'll tell you, I once heard from Rebbetzin Chana Reichman from Englewood. I heard this from her like 15 years ago. Rebbetzin Reichman said that she once went, I don't know if I told you this story, she once went with a group of 12 women from Englewood on a mission to Eretz Yisrael. You know, an inspirational trip. And she said that they went to Bnei Brak to meet with Rebbetzin Kanievsky. Alei Shalom. Everybody, Kanievsky spent the whole time they were with these women telling them how lucky, how fortunate, how blessed we are to be Jewish. That was her message. That was her whole message. Just drilling in. We're so blessed to be Jewish. We're so fortunate to be Jewish. We're so lucky. It's such a source of joy in our life. That's the feeling we have on Purim, Chavra. How lucky we are. How fortunate we are to be Jewish. Ashreinu matov chalkeinu. So Rebbetzin Reichman said afterwards, they went with Rebbetzin Kanievsky to a bris. There was a bris that was taking place. They went with her to the bris. Rebbetzin Reichman said, I was standing next to Rebbetzin Kanievsky during the bris. She was telling us which prakim of Tehillim to say, exactly which point of the bris. Very holy experience. After the bris, they couldn't get this baby to stop crying. It was the 16th child in this family. Kanai Nahara, large, traditional B'nai Brak family, style family. And I guess did all the preparations trying to get, you know, their other 15 kids out in the morning to the bris. They forgot to bring a pacifier. No one had a pacifier. And the baby was crying, crying, crying after the bris. And usually the baby cries for a little while. And then they, you know, they put a little wine in his mouth. And they stick a bottle or a pacifier in his mouth. The kid quiets it. They couldn't get the kid to stop crying. Everyone's trying to quiet the baby down. No one's got a pacifier. They can't get this kid to stop crying. So Rebbetzin Kanievsky says, give me the baby. She says, pass me the baby. She signals, give me the baby. Bring me the baby. They bring this baby. This kid's screaming. After the bris. And people getting nervous. Like at a point, like if the kid doesn't calm down, like, you know, maybe something's not right. She said, give me the baby, pass me the baby. Rebbetzin Reichman said, I was standing right next to Rebbetzin Kanievsky. She said she took the baby in her arms. She held the baby. And she says to the baby, Ata Yehudi, Ata Yehudi, Ata Yehudi. You're a Jew, you're a Jew, you're a Jew. She was saying, you're a Jew, you have nothing to cry about. She said, like that, the baby stopped crying. A Jew doesn't have anything to cry about. A Jew is not Yitikra. Ah, but it's hard to be a Jew. I literally just got a bris. Not so simple. If you understand, if a tzaddikus of that caliber whispers in your ear, you're a Yid, and you should know what a privilege it is. Yeah, but my body drags me down. Your body is the greatest gift that Hashem ever gave you. Tiferes is Gufa. That's the greatest glory and splendor you can give a Kodesh Baruch. So I'll just end with one last comment. I've been reading, if anyone wants a good book recommendation, I recently bought the newly published biography of Rav Yitzchak Shiner. Rav Shiner is an amazing story. Rav Shiner grew up in Pittsburgh. Rav Shiner went to Rogers Elementary School. Rav Shiner went to Peabody High School. Rav Shiner spent a semester at the University of Pittsburgh. And then they scooped him up and dragged him to Beis Medrash, and that was the end of the story. He became the Kamenitzer Rosh Yeshiva. He married the granddaughter of Rav Baruch Ber. I mean, an amazing story. An amazing, amazing story. I think I told you, he said the difference between himself and Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, right, who also an American bacher, you know, he said the difference between Rav Nassim Tzvi and myself is that I was a Pirates fan and Rav Nassim Tzvi was a Cubs fan. So he's from Chicago, I was from Pittsburgh. That's the same story. I'm talking about a person like, unbelievable that he became the person that he became. The very, Shiner was very Gadol B'Yisrael, massive Gadol, Kamenitz Rosh Yeshiva, but very, very normal because of the way he grew up. He understood, you know, people who grew up somewhat more like ourselves. So he was a rabbi in Switzerland for a period of time. And they tell a story in here. There was a group of young men who came to Switzerland, and someone had arranged a Shabbos for these guys. And Rav Shiner was asked to speak to them over Shabbos. Some of them came from not such religious homes. Some of them came from homes, and they weren't, you know, practicing as strong as maybe their families were. And it was Parshas Devar. So Rav Shiner told them the following. We'll conclude with this. Rav Shiner said to them, there's a medrash on the words Eila HaDevarim, the first two words in Devarim. The medrash says on the words Eila HaDevarim, medrash says Devarim Kidvorim. What's a Devora? A bee. So Rav Shiner says, the medrash is saying that Eila HaDevarim, right, these are the words of Torah, Kidvorim. Torah is like a bee. How is Torah like a bee? So Rav Shiner said, a bee has two distinguishing characteristics. On the one hand, the bee produces honey. A bee also has the ability to sting. But think about it for a second. He says, the honey, right, he said, I'll read you his words. I want to tell you something. In all my years, I have yet to meet a person who keeps Torah and mitzvos in a real way and says it's hard to be a Yid. The people who are always saying, is it schwer zu sein Yid, it's hard to be a Yid, are the people who don't keep the mitzvos. You see, mitzvos are like honey, and honey comes from bees. Bees possess two main characteristics. They create honey and they sting. What the Medrash is telling us is that their honey is kept for themselves, right? A bee collects honey and makes honey. I mean, people eventually steal their honey, but right, the bee is collecting honey for itself. This is a reference to the people who learn Torah and keep the mitzvos, who gather the mitzvos. To those people, Torah and mitzvos are as geschmack and as sweet as honey. Or Shiner biography. As for their stings, we're done in 30 seconds. As for their stings, which they reserve for others, this is a reference to people who don't keep the mitzvos. To those people, being religious is akin to the sting of the bee. But the reason they feel that way is because they themselves don't keep the mitzvos. If you're an outsider, right, it's a sting. Torah mitzvah is a sting. It's a burden. It's a tircha. It's restrictive. It's controlling. But to an insider, and again, Rav Chaim Kanievsky was the ultimate insider. The ultimate insider. And Purim is the Yom Tov that makes us into the ultimate insiders. Right? It's tasting that sweetness of Yiddishkeit. So Rabbi Zakarievsky taking that baby in her arms and saying, Atayu di. There's nothing in the world to cry about. Okay, so Chevra, I hope all of our hachanas for Purim this year, this was our goodbye to Purim share. I hope all of our hachanas paid off this year. I don't know, I felt like this year Purim was a different level. But we should be zocha to celebrate the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be holy human beings. We don't have to be malachim. The goal is not to be an angel. Anshei kodesh tiyunli. Ein simcha el babasa. Okay, we should be zocha to live that. Rabbi Schnall, it's nice to see you. Chassidim say it. I mean, it's Pesachim Kov Tes, but Chassidim say Ein simcha el babasa. To be able to serve Hashem with flesh.